Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is presented by Kroger. More ways to save: fresh food, low prices at Kroger.
Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I actually woke up on this Friday morning really, really excited about the game tomorrow. And I typically do that on Fridays anyway. In addition to being a UGA fan, I am, much like many of you, just a lover of college football, right? We don't get that many college football Saturdays. Pretty good slate of games this week, all things, you know, considered. Georgia involved in this, too. So it's pretty typical for me to wake up Friday pretty happy, pretty ready to go for a really good game. However, maybe even more excited than I thought I would be, obviously, given the result from this past week, which we don't have to, you know, necessarily delve into all that much. Now, the numbers facing Georgia the rest of the way, at first blush, admittedly, don't sound that great. According to ESPN's FPI, less than a 2% chance of winning the national championship, less than a 13.2% chance of winning the SEC, just a 5.6% chance of winning all its remaining regular season games. However, this morning for DogNation.com, I wrote a piece that's going to publish at some point in time, along with the rest of our Dog Nation team, our cover four, where myself, Jeff Sintel, Mike Griffith, Connor Riley, we all weigh in on the big issues facing Georgia, where I said, even, you know, despite those really long odds, if you had to ask me what the most likely result for Georgia is the rest of the way, I guess I'm going to say 11-1, you know, going into the SEC championship game with the South Carolina loss, the only blemish on the schedule. Now, listen, do I feel super confident about that one way or another? No, I don't necessarily feel all that confident about it, but I am really excited to see how Georgia responds to the situation that it's in right now. And I think kind of a desperate Georgia, I think, is actually a more fun Georgia to watch here. Georgia in desperation mode. I think that's going to be pretty entertaining, if nothing else. And admittedly, in kind of a weird way, I'm more excited about the Kentucky game now than I would have been before Georgia was put into this really, really intense, backs against the wall, desperation situation than it is. You know, a wise man once said that when all hope is gone, the only thing left is relief. I don't exactly know what that means, but in Georgia's case, I guess I hope that it means of you might as well just relax and just let it rip and go out and do what you need to do, because being careful, being really, really careful with the football, trying to be, being really, really careful not to make a mistake, hasn't really helped y'all that much. Georgia being careful hasn't led to a lack of mistakes. They were doomed on Saturday by a ton of mistakes while trying to be extra careful. So you might as well this Saturday just let it rip. Let Jake Fromm do what he does. Let the offense do what it can do. Let the defense just get after Bowman and the rest of this Kentucky offense. Just let it rip and go out and have some fun, and let's watch Georgia now play from kind of a place of desperation, knowing that it can afford no more losses. It can afford no more trip-ups, and at any point in time, if that were to happen, what could be a dream season would turn into a disastrous nightmare of a season. But that scenario facing Georgia, I don't mind that, and I'm actually really curious to see how the Dogs respond to all of this. One guy in particular who already seems be responding pretty well is Georgia running back DeAndre Swift, who's kind of a tough, edgy, hard-nosed leader type guy as it is. And boy, some of the stuff he said this week I thought was pretty interesting. First of all, from that leadership standpoint, how you shake off this loss, it sounds like even early in the week, Swift was kind of ready to get back to the business of playing football this Saturday against the Wildcats. Here's a taste of a little bit of that from DeAndre Swift.
Man, we can't really dwell on it too long. We got a lot of football left, so everything ahead of us is everything we want ahead of us. Just no room for error.
Boy, I love every – not a ton of words from Swift, but I love them all. A lot of football left. Everything's still out in front of Georgia, but there is no longer any room for error. And that lack of room for error, that sort of desperation mode that I described it as, I don't think that should make Georgia more tight, because let's face it, a tight, kind of pensive Georgia is not a very successful Georgia based on last week against the Gamecocks. You might as well just sort of grip it and rip it and kind of let it go. And maybe Swift indeed wants to do that, because apparently, according to Kirby Smart, there were a few players who kind of met with him at the very beginning of the week, even on Sunday, saying, hey, we're ready to get back at it in practice. We're ready to work. We're ready to get better. We're ready to do what needs to be done. Swift said he was one of those guys and kind of went into more detail about what his message to the rest of the team is going to be now, knowing that Georgia can't afford any more trip-ups.
As a leader, you want to try to get this team on the right path going forward, just to let everybody know. Like I said, one loss doesn't define you. Nobody likes to lose, but we'll be fine. We will.
You know, one of the things we said at the very beginning of the year was that Georgia's best players on paper needed to be its best players in the field, and its leaders this year needed to be the guys, not the freshmen who provide the nice spark, but the juniors, in some cases seniors, who've been around here, that was supposed to be the nucleus of Georgia's championship run. And now, with Georgia having its championship dreams put in doubt, the fact that Swift is one of the guys speaking up here, I do think potentially bodes well for the Bulldogs. I can't guarantee you how this one plays on Saturday. Will Georgia win it by 4 touchdowns the way that some fans hope they will? I can't guarantee that, and admittedly, offensively, I'm a little skeptical they can score enough points to do that right now. But my skepticism doesn't necessarily impact Georgia one way or another. And the fact that Swift wants to speak up the way that he does, that does have the potential of impacting Georgia and potentially impacting for the positive. Now, the other thing from Swift here this week, as we kind of shift gears just a little bit, is in addition to kind of speaking up on his own role as a leader, Swift was pretty outspoken in his belief that maybe some changes need to come for the Georgia offense. And boy, it sounds like Swift could have been a commenter to our program here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, or a part of the forum at forum.dognation.com, or really any other place where UGA fans congregate. Because one of the things that has gotten some attention this week is that when Swift was asked some questions, he didn't really pull very many punches in his belief that the Georgia offense maybe needs to be a little bit different than it has been in a couple key specific areas. Once again, here is DeAndre Swift with a statement that kind of raised an eyebrow or two, just on the basis of how different it is from what we're normally used to hearing from Georgia players.
Just, I think we need to take more shots downfield, try to get the ball out of our playmakers in space, whatever the coaches think that is, think that might be, I think you do a better job at it.
So it's really important to put that statement into some context, because when you just hear that, if you were to only, I guess, read the words there, read the text of the statement, Swift saying, we need to get the ball to playmakers in space. He's obviously one of those playmakers. We need to do some things differently on offense. Boy, it almost sounds like that Swift is pointing a finger of blame towards the coaches for why things sputtered on Saturday against South Carolina, and why maybe some of that was predicted in previous games against Vanderbilt and against Notre Dame, and maybe even part of the game against Tennessee. But if you listen to the full interview that Swift gave to reporters this week, and you can go to the Dog Nation YouTube page and see the entire thing, and my hope is that you will do that, because the Dog Nation YouTube page is full of those kinds of interviews. It's a great way to keep up with all the Georgia coverage from Dog Nation, including what's happening in Athens each and every day. You can subscribe and make sure you stay up to date on all of that. But if you watch the full DeAndre Swift interview, you hear him doing more than just calling out coaches, if that's indeed what that was, for maybe not the best offensive philosophy. He takes a lot of responsibility on this himself, and he puts a lot of the responsibility on his fellow players there as well, in a lot of instances, to just be better at what they're doing. But it's hard to ignore the fact that Swift certainly would like to potentially see some more stuff from the Georgia offense than he's doing. And frankly, I think DeAndre Swift's earned the right to say that, especially in the way that he says that. Not a, you know, verbose, kind of, you know, look at me kind of way, and get the ball to me kind of way, you got to feed me. No, I think Swift's talking about the entirety of the offense. And someone who brought that up to my attention last night, and I thought this was a really good point, we had a great night last night at the Marlows and Dunwoody for our Marlows matchup, and former Georgia All-American John Stinchcombe was with us for that, as he is for each of our Marlows broadcasts, and he was kind of saying that point. It'd be one thing if in that clip you just heard from DeAndre Swift, if he was saying, listen, I'm the Heisman candidate running back, you got to get me involved, you got to get me the football, you got to do those things for me. But that's not what Swift did. He's talking about how the offense in general would work the best, him and other guys who'll be touching the football included. And I think that's a very important thing to understand in the context of that. In fact, here is more of John on the subject of Swift being outspoken about the current state of the Georgia offense.
What I hear is we didn't have any big plays. And he's right. I mean, whether it was the run game or the pass game, you look for the breakout plays, the runs over 12 yards. We didn't have very many of those on Saturday. And then the big chunk plays in the pass game. That's really what he's speaking to. We didn't get any of that. We didn't have the over-the-top, stretch the defense, make the safeties play deep. South Carolina was able to basically rush their four, play some press man on the edges, or just man with two free over top, and sit back and challenge Georgia to take what was in the middle. And we didn't execute well in taking those opportunities for the chunk play. So when DeAndre Swift mentions that, he's speaking to facts. I mean, it's not calling anybody out. There wasn't big chunk plays.
So listen, I think you should go check out the full conversation with John about this last night, because he had some great things to say, and he's right there that DeAndre Swift's not calling anyone out. He's just speaking the truth with the current state of the Georgia offense. And it sounds like, based on the other clips that we also played for you a moment ago, he's also speaking that truth behind closed doors as well, raising his hand and volunteering himself to say, I want to be a leader as Georgia now moves forward through the second half of the season, knowing it can afford no more slip-ups, it can afford no more losses if it wants to keep its championship dreams alive. It is a little bit of a version of Georgian desperation mode. I think that's fun to watch, though. I'm honestly curious about where it goes from here. This Saturday against Kentucky, the big games in November that that follow beyond that. We showed you the Instagram clip from Swift last night where he says that, you know, if you're counting us out, that just means you can't count. I think that's a pretty good sentiment from Swift there as well. This is a version of Georgia right now that knows it really needs to go out and prove its doubters wrong. And I think that extra motivation might serve him well, including this Saturday against the Wildcats. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 963 FM, available as a podcast wherever you find them, Apple, Google. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com as well. We're really glad to have you with us. And speaking of our friends at Kroger, something else I'm really glad to tell you about. We haven't done this in a while, but I'm glad to be talking about it again because my kids love this. The return of Kroger Chef Jr. at select Kroger stores. Now, in October, the Kroger Chef Jr. item is a dirt pudding cup. Now, I've got two young kids. They would love this, and I'm sure your kids would there as well. So when you come and you make the dirt pudding cup, you can also get a recipe card, an apron, a chef hat, a recipe box, and a whisk, because who doesn't need an extra whisk to add to their kitchen tool collection? Here's the website you can go to, Kroger Chef Jr., and that's spelled out J-U-N-I-O-R, for those of you who are listening, KrogerChefJr.com, to register for your class today at your participating Kroger location. Good to have them on the program. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up later on. There is a ton of recruiting stuff to get to today, including a big weekend of visits for UGA. We'll kind of cover all of that in great detail in a moment. A couple things to tell you about before we get there, though. Dog Nation Invasion. Boy, the tickets are moving fast for this. We still have some Gator Hater t-shirts left, though. So my anticipation is, as we head towards next week, this is going to start thinning out a little bit more. We're trying to make room for as many as we possibly can. 150, the first 150 to sign up do get one of the Gator Hater t-shirts. We have reprinted those. We're ready to go on that. So DogNationInvasion.com is the website to go to register for our big all-inclusive tailgate experience and to find out more details. Of course, it's the day of the game there in Jacksonville, Saturday, November 2nd, from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. This is a luxury all-inclusive tailgate experience. Food, beverage, entertainment, all covered for you. The Dog Nation team going to be there. Myself, I couldn't miss it for the world. Jeff Sintel, Connor Riley, Mike Griffith, the entire team kind of hanging out with you, talking some Georgia football, getting ready for the cocktail party. It's all brought to you by R.S. Andrews, Kroger, and Peach Pass. Go to DogNationInvasion.com to secure your spot and your Gator Hater t-shirt before it is too late. DogNationInvasion.com. For more details on that. Time to go around the doghouse here right now, presented today by my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And as a precursor to our interview with Jeff coming up in a moment, I want to give you a little snippet of an interview that Jeff did himself with 5-star offensive lineman UGA commit Broderick Jones, because I think it sets the stage for what Georgia is still doing in its class of 2020 and the class of 2021, and how the work of that recruiting effort is not diminished all that much by a loss to South Carolina on Saturday. Fans kind of dejected and a bit of a bad mood this week. There's no doubt that's been true. We saw some of that even last night with our friends over at Marlowe's in Dunwoody. A lot of Georgia fans having a hard time shaking this one off. However, recruits, they kind of seem to get over this stuff a lot more easily. And when it comes to the perspective of where Georgia has going forward, I thought Broderick Jones offered a pretty good taste of that. Here is the 5-star UGA commit, his thoughts on the South Carolina loss and what it doesn't mean for Georgia. Here's Jones.
You know, every game's not going to go in your favor. It's always some hiccups. You're gonna run into some brick walls. The game's not going to be going your way. Your quarterback might be messing up. Your line might be messing up. Everybody just got to be in sync, and I think that's something they can get done. One game does not affect their season, though.
So use that as the backdrop for what's about to happen this Saturday, where Marcus Roseme is going to be in town and Rick Gilbert's going to be in town. 2021 prospects are going to be in town. A chance to really impress recruits once again. And they are no less excited about being between the hedges and enjoying that nice West End Zone facility. They are no less excited about that now that Georgia has a one in the loss column. They are still just as eager to be there as you would have ever imagined them being. And I'm sure they're also eager to see Georgia put on a good show with under the lights and hopefully not too much rain and everything else. So I'll invite you to go once again to the Dog Nation YouTube page and dognation.com. You can check out the full interview with Broderick Jones. Really good stuff from Jeff and really great perspective from Jones on the situation of the Dogs on the field. He also sheds a little bit of light on his recruitment as well. So check that out, dognation.com. Really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. For now, though, it's Around the Doghouse presented by my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And you probably heard the quote, I think Benjamin Franklin is the one who said this, that failing to prepare means preparing to fail. And obviously that's true in lots of walks of life. It can also be true in a situation involving, you know, divorce as well, especially if you feel like you're going through it. Now, listen, a lot of people put this conversation off because they don't want to talk about it. But if you find yourself in that scenario, my advice is not to put that consultation off with my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. Start laying out a plan for how you can make your life whole again with your finances and your family, your relationship with your children, and everything else. You can get a free telephone consultation from Merriweather and Tharp. They are your source for Georgia divorce, and they are great friends of mine. They have a very, very generous spirit with how they deal with people in this respect. It's a tough situation to go through, but if you find yourself in it, you want to have an advocate on your side. And boy, the folks at Merriweather and Tharp are aggressive advocates on your behalf. So check them out at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, it's a Dog Nation Daily presented today by Kroger. We're going to hear from Kirby Smart a little bit later on some key issues for the Dogs ahead of the Wildcats on Saturday. But for now, as I said, tons of recruiting information. Let's talk to our buddy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Great to have Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily here today. And Jeff, in just a moment, I want to get to kind of some of the key particulars for this weekend, Rick Gilbert included. I actually think that Georgia's pitch to a Rick Gilbert is maybe a little bit better than some fans think it is. Now, I, at this point in time, don't necessarily believe that Gilbert's coming to Georgia, but I believe the pitch for Georgia this weekend is actually pretty good. So we'll get to that in a minute. But if you don't mind, let me piggyback off of what we heard before you joined us, which was a small snippet of your very good interview with Broderick Jones, the five-star UGA commit. I would invite folks to go to DogNation.com or the Dog Nation YouTube page here and see the entire thing for themselves, including that very impressive pet snake that Jones has called Piper. It's kind of a cool part of that video. You should check that out. But we had folks asking us in our comment section during Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday, you know, make the comparison between Jones at this stage of his development to what Andrew Thomas was right before he came to UGA. They are similar levels of prospects. If anything, I guess Jones may be even slightly higher rated than Thomas was at this point in time. But Thomas was the kind of guy that was able to come in and not just compete for playing time right away. He earned a starting spot from the word go. How do you compare Jones as a prospect to what Thomas was as a part of the class of 2017?
Yeah, Brandon, good morning, everybody. Before we jump into this, just wanted to say every once in a while that it's a great privilege and to be able to talk to everybody on a Friday, no matter what the team's record is or where the recruiting class is currently ranked at this time. With Jones, man, you got to say a couple things. Number one, he's not as long as Andrew Thomas, but I think he's a better athlete than Andrew Thomas. Jones is a guy that the program isn't Lithonia High School, with all due respect to the Bulldogs. That isn't the same program as Pace Academy. Pace Academy has all the resources in the world. They have former college coaches galore, former NFL coaches, NFL players galore, that are around that staff. And so, you know, Pace is a really good training ground for putting out college prospects. Broderick Jones is an Under Armour All-American. He's a guy that is, still an All-American type football player, more highly rated than Andrew Thomas was as well. I think the thing about plugging and playing and playing right away at Georgia, if you would have told me that Broderick was going to early enroll, I would think he could do some of those same things in his freshman year that Andrew Thomas did, especially maybe at a right tackle with Cade Mays being the left tackle. I think the fact that he's not going to enroll early anymore kind of slows that learning curve a little bit, because he's not going to be there until late May or June. And that early practice is really important. Now, Andrew Thomas didn't have it, but the thing is there is I thought that early enrollee-type status, which is what Jones was looking at for some time, I thought that might have evened things out or made up the difference between prospecthood with Broderick Jones coming in and Andrew Thomas coming in. But, Brandon, make no bones about it. This young man is a clear left tackle. He's a guy that will kind of be a python around some of the top SEC defensive ends for years to come and just lock those dudes up and lock them out. He can do that ballet at left tackle with the feet very well, very aggressive, naturally aggressive, wants to make something out of his life in the game. And he's a clear, you look at him, guy, 6'6", right, and he's like you, man. He looks like a slim and trim athlete when he's in that Georgia gear. I mean, every time I see Brandon Jones, I say, okay, my eyes say one thing, but I've got to add 20 more pounds to what he actually weighs. Huh. That's the type of athlete that Broderick Jones is.
Pretty interesting stuff. Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. Let me talk about Rick Gilbert here for a moment. And I know that for weeks and weeks we talked about him every single day. At this point in time, as a fan, I've pretty much waved the white flag of surrender. I don't think that Gilbert's likely coming to Georgia at this point in time. But I do want to say this on the eve of his official visit weekend, and that is, I think that Georgia's pitch to Gilbert is probably a little bit better than some fans think it might be. You know, Gilbert's going to come here this weekend, and presumably when he has a chance to talk to Todd Hartley or maybe talks to Cortez Hankton even, certainly when he talks to Kirby Smart, there's going to be a lot of discussions about how would you use me in this offense? Gilbert could play a lot of different positions. You've been saying now for more than a year that he likes the idea of catching footballs. To his credit, he has caught a bunch of them at Marietta High School. He's a real weapon. It's not a project player. This is a guy who's a big part of that Blue Devil offense, and that's a talented team, and they play a pretty stiff level of competition in Georgia, and Gilbert shows up. He catches footballs for the Blue Devils, and he would say, how can you help me do the same thing here at the college level? Well, if I'm Kirby Smart, here's what I'm going to say to Rick Gilbert on that. You want to see yourself on this field on Saturday night against the Wildcats? With all due respect, don't look at Eli Wolf. With all due respect, don't look at Charlie Werner, even though they're the tight ends, and that's probably the position that you would be playing at least a lot of the time, that kind of flex-in situation. What I would tell a Rick Gilbert to look at is, look at George Pickens. Now, you're heavier than Pickens is. You're 250. Pickens is more like probably 200 pounds or, you know, something along those lines. You're heavier than he is, but when it comes to the overall athletic profile, you're similar to him. You know, Pickens is blanked by double coverage, and Georgia's still throwing him the football. Pickens' numbers actually are pretty good thus far this year. He's got 19 catches through his first half of his freshman season. He's caught 2 touchdowns. Jeff, I'm going to say this kind of cryptically. There are a lot of highly regarded freshman receivers in America who would be very happy to have the stats that George Pickens has put up, some of which who took C&D, CD, did not play coach's decisions last week. Let me be a little bit more cryptic. Who have occasionally not played in some of their team's big games. There are a lot of receivers who would like to be used as much as Georgia's using George Pickens right now. So from that standpoint, I think that if I'm Georgia, I don't say look at Wolf, look at Werner. I say look at Pickens as kind of a flex in, as a wide receiver some of the time, which I think that Gilbert's probably athletic enough to do. That's the pitch I would probably make to Gilbert. Maybe it's too little, too late. Maybe Gilbert's already made up his mind that it's a school other than Georgia. Likely that's going to be the scenario. But that's the pitch that I would make, and I think that's actually a pretty effective pitch when you see how well that Georgia's used Pickens thus far this year.
Funny you should mention that name, Brandon, because I got a couple points, maybe even a couple that I know you and maybe even the DogNation.com, Dog Nation Daily audience might not have heard yet. I hold these things to be self-evident regarding Eric Gilbert. I believe that going back to May of 2018, I thought that he already needed everything to know and saw everything he needed to see about Georgia. I thought he at the point he was prepared to gleefully choose the Bulldogs. That was probably based to a lot of strong recruiting early in his time, and also deep, well-rooted connections between his lead recruiter, Dale McGee, and Team Gilbert and that whole family. The problem there was he hadn't really done his due diligence anywhere else, and that's just smart to do, Brandon, no matter if you wear red and black or blue or orange or crimson and white. He hadn't looked at the Texas A&M, the LSUs, the Clemson, the Alabamas. And that's what a lot of his senior year ball kid's been about, especially the summer before his senior year, kind of checking out the unknown. And I think with that, it's allowed Alabama, for instance, and I think it's allowed a Clemson to really catch his interest. Tennessee was in there for a little bit, but I think that Georgia State loss covered a lot of their momentum drain there. The thing there with Gilbert, though, is I want folks to remember, there are recruits, I know this is a long time to think about, maybe like 2 years ago, but there were recruits that came into Sanford Stadium as undecided maybe as where Gilbert is today and still wound up choosing Georgia. And that was before the locker room. That was before the West End Zone. That was before the LED lights. That was before even maybe even the Gator Hater countdown got rolling. And they still wound up choosing Georgia. And I think Georgia's in a spot now where it's not these guys are coming in and it's more like a the walk to engagement or something like that with a lot of these five stars that roll into Athens these days. It's not a given or it's not likely or it's not Georgia's to lose. But I still think Georgia has a shot to kind of resurrect a lot of those feelings that, that Gilbert had a long time ago. They better do that. Otherwise, as Brandon likes to say, they'll be toe-tagging this recruitment. And funny you should mention George Pickens, because a lot of folks that get down in the Dog Nation forum, they brought up Pickens and Gilbert a lot this week. And a couple of metrics stand out. First of all, they say, let the boy go catch the ball if he wants to catch the ball, because they see what's how Georgia's having trouble with separation of routes and getting windows for Fromm to put a ball in. But then they cite these things, and it was part of that, some of that George Pickens stuff that you were just discussing, Brandon. They both have similar times in the laser and the 40. Both of those are 4.7-ish. They both have similar vertical leaps. I think Gilbert's time is, I think Gilbert's vertical jump is even a little couple inches better than one than what George Pickens has. And then the short shuttle times are also in the 4.4s. They're in the 4.3s. Those are very similar. The only difference between these two amazing athletes is Gilbert weighs 250 and George Pickens weighed about 190, 195 when he ran all those times during his opening testing. A lot of stuff to think about there. What if Georgia had a Eric Gilbert type guy out there right now? I think this is my third time I've said it on your recent program. I think if he was there at Georgia right now, he would be a starter and he would be making a lot of plays for the Bulldogs. That's the thing Georgia has to show him this weekend.
Well,
we don't have guys who can do what you can do. And that's why they need it.
Sorry for cutting you off, but it kind of reminds me of something that Terrence Edwards said on our program yesterday. When you talk about receivers getting separation, and I'm going to paraphrase Terrence a little bit here, but this is essentially what he said, that sometimes we have a tendency to think of separation being like 5 yards, you know, just running well past someone. Terrence on the program yesterday said, though, separation only needs to be about a yard. It's how you position your body. It's how you position your hands. It's how high you get up in the air. Separation doesn't have to be, you know, 5 yards of separation. And we see that with Pickens, who, you know, sometimes it looks like he's double covered, but he's got an angle. He's got an opportunity to leap. He's got a chance to get his big body in the air. And on an accurate throw, he's got a chance to haul that in. I do think Gilbert could be, you know, very much the same way because, honestly, I'm assuming that Gilbert probably does at least have a little bit of a preconceived bias that maybe Georgia's an offense that's not great at getting balls to playmakers right now. That's how he fashions himself. But, you know, to kind of circle back on this, while, you know, the passing game for Georgia hasn't been as explosive as anyone wants it to be, I do think through six games, Pickens has been a success story, and I think that Georgia deserves to tout that privately with Gilbert this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The clear message there is, yeah, we're not going to show you a lot of the routes and stuff that you can do because you could do something which is like no one we have in the program can do. You can run those routes like a receiver. I mean, Brandon, Eric Gilbert already got his black belt in Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy like a season or two ago. He can break guys off. He can sink his hips. He can have them lean one way and break them off the other way. And he can catch a lot of balls. And the other thing you talk about when Terrence makes that point, you don't need a yard. Brandon, Eric Gilbert's going to be a 250-pound wall in his own right that safeties can't get through in order to get the ball. And he can play power forward with a lot of these plays for Georgia or wherever he winds up going forward. It's no matter in my mind. It's a small matter in my mind about whether or not Eric Gilbert will make plays in college football. The question that remains for the Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer is, which colors will be will he be making those plays in.
So let me ask you one very, very simple, direct question at the end. It was interesting a moment ago to hear you say that you think that Georgia can still be in this, but honesty compels me to admit that I'm assuming he's probably got Georgia in the bronze medal position right now. They may be on the podium, but they are like the shortest box on that podium with maybe Clemson, Alabama, teams like that ahead. I don't take Tennessee seriously, but Clemson, Alabama, I take, you know, very seriously in this recruitment, just based on, you know, kind of, you know, what you've said and, you know, just kind of following along with this a little bit. Is that a fair assessment of mine right now that Georgia's probably no better than third place for Gilbert going into the weekend?
Yeah, that's probably a logical way to look at it, Brandon. But we've reached these times in Georgia recruiting. Now, if you take away the fact that he's an in-state prospect and been recruited so hard for so many years, I know a lot of Georgia fans would have loved to be third going into an official visit with a lot of game-breaker type tight ends or receiver hybrid flex-in types like Gilbert. They're in this game, Brandon, and I know it's different for Georgia fans when they sit there and they go, wow, all the crystal balls are pointing this way, or this guy I know here, or they said this in the Dog Nation forum, they have a good feeling. It's almost not, like I said before, it's not one of those coronation officials where wink, wink, nudge, nudge, this is the team that's sitting pole position and everybody else has got to try to knock them off. Let's not forget, one thing that Georgia still does extremely well, and that doesn't lapse when there is a noon kickoff, is this, by and large, should be seen as one of the top two or three recruiting staffs in the country. And then when it comes to recruiting five-star prospects, no one has done it better than Georgia over the last 3 years.
We've got more recruiting stuff with Jeff Sintel, including a big-time five-star 2021 prospect on campus this weekend, another big-time UGA commit who's taking a visit to the Dogs. We'll cover all that here coming up. Before that, let me remind you about my friends at the Atlanta and North Georgia Building Trades Council. Now, for a lot of you that do kind of construction-type work for a living, it's very important that you be aware of this organization, because the ANGTBC is dedicated to the work and economic stability of organized construction workers in North America, and they offer a lot for you. I'm talking about better work opportunities, living wages. They can protect your benefits. They also offer a no-tuition, earn-while-you-learn apprentice training. You can earn as much as $100,000 while serving an apprenticeship. And, of course, they give you employer-paid pension and insurance. Wages up to 30% higher than non-union workers. And this isn't just for men. Women and everyone are encouraged to apply. So let me give you a couple of ways to get in touch with the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades Council. Can we show folks how to get in touch here? 404-584-0005. That's 404-584-0005. Or GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com. That's GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com on the web for more on that. All right, Jeff, I mentioned before you got a UGA commit, Marcus Roseme, taking his visit to the Dogs here this weekend. And hard not to think about how these recruits will be impacted by the weather that's expected to come in. I know, overwhelming chance of rain right now. I guess I'm going to hold out hope that it's not quite as bad as the initial projections are of it being, because fans don't get too many opportunities to enjoy fall Saturdays in Athens. I don't want to see one get turned into a quagmire if it doesn't have to be. But I also think about the West End Zone recruiting facility in a time like this. I know this is kind of an obvious answer, but how much does a nice, luxurious place to house recruits during a game become if the weather's not conducive to sitting outside?
Yeah, that's $65 million, Brandon, I believe, very well spent. And, you know, there'll be tables inside that room before the game when every kind of recruiter has their own position group and guys in town to look for. And I think some of the names there, you're going to see Eric Gilbert on his official visit. Tariq Gilbert on his official visit. You're going to see Marcus Roseme, another top five wide receiver that's taking his long-planned official visit to Georgia. The kicker, Jared Zirkle, will be in town. That's the new Jay-Z, the new kicker. And everybody knows how Dog Nation loves its kickers. It, great story there with that young man. His mom was actually a Georgia grad. We'll get around to telling that on the site sometime soon. But then you've got James Williams, the five-star number one safety in the country at 6'4", number four overall prospect for 2021. He's going to be there. The Kevious Walker will be back. And, Brandon, that's still not an official visit. That official visit's going to come in December for Zacchaeus as well. And there's going to be a lot of folks that that are going to be breaking out the rain gear, and they're going to be breaking out their game day bitter cold stuff And the one thing, you know, everybody that's worried about this weather, there's a different counterbalance going on with this, Brandon, a teeter-totter. Because I know a lot of folks this week have told me, they've texted me, they're lamenting about the fact that once they turn this ticket in and it's scanned or that tub, that stub, it's tore, there's only two more home games left for this season in Athens this year. And I think a lot of the true Dog Nation fans are going to be there come, you know, bitter cold, frozen tundra, driving rain, that kind of Forrest Gump rain that comes in sideways or whatever. I think they're going to still want to be there because even last week's a great example. I've spoken to two recruits, two big-time recruits that were there last week for that South Carolina game. And I thought, Brandon, that was kind of like Georgia's crowd throwing their 78-mile-an-hour fastball for that noon kickoff and lack of explosive plays. But according to these young men who aren't used to Georgia football atmosphere and the environment yet, they made it sound like they saw Randy Johnson out there coming three quarters at 99 miles an hour, just obliterating seagulls. They can be impressed by a Georgia crowd, but maybe the folks in the stands feel like it's more like a croquet match.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to say that. Let me touch on a couple of other issues before we let you go. You know, Jeff, last week was obviously not a good day for the Dogs, but I was thinking about UGA recruiting during the game. You know, South Carolina's got all those tall defensive backs, including the young man that had the three interceptions. And when you see them having the success they're having, I immediately think, boy, it should be great to have James Williams come to Georgia as part of the class of 2021. That's a safety you know I like as it is. 6'5", I just think that kind of size and height really, really helps in the day and age when the SEC has so many very good wide receivers. He's let it be known on Twitter this weekend that he plans on being there. Obviously, an unofficial visit for him. I guess just give us a quick thumbnail on kind of who Williams is one more time and kind of where things stand with him, because big, tall defensive backs are not going to go out of style anytime soon, just given how many really, really good receivers this league seems to possess at the moment.
Yeah, guys, with that, I've got two stories that I just appreciate the chance to share every time when it comes to James Williams. Number one is he plays to honor his lost mother. She raised him. She brought him up. He means a dear, dear part of his life. And now he's kind of moved in with a foster family of sorts. They've helped him get on the right path. And that's always that good off-the-field stuff that everybody needs to know besides that giant of a young man wearing number 20. The second of them was when I got a chance, I think it was the first or second time I spoke to James Williams, and we started talking about his height. And he's like, you know, the question is, are you really 6'5", comes up. And this was a young man that was so comfortable in his walk and where he was, and he's like, man, I'm really not that tall. I know the recruiting sites all have me at 6'5", but he's like, I'm really 6'4" in a little bit, maybe 6'4½". I'm not as tall as everybody makes me out to be. And so when a guy's 6'5", and the whole world thinks he's 6'5", and he's confident enough in his game to just be truthful and say, I'm about 6'4" and some change, that speaks something to me. And I'll tell you, Brandon, the first time I saw him in action, I wanted to see, okay, is this a guy with the length and the size, 6'4¾", 218 pounds or so? Is he a guy that's going to be moved to outside linebacker? Is he going to be a linebacker one day? And were we just fooling folks with where he's rated now as his safety? And I was at a national 7-on-7 event, and he must have picked off three passes, including ranging kind of like Ed Reed would, or going from one side of the field to the other to snatch passes. He made like three interceptions in maybe about 8 or 9 minutes of time where I was like, no, this kid is a true safety. He can play the safety position. He's directing other teammates about where to be in the scheme. And he makes no bones about it. He's going to be a safety in college football. That's what he wants to play, and that's what he feels he has the skills to play as well.
So on campus this weekend, if you don't mind, let me do two quick things before we let you go. And I'm pretty fascinated by this next question. We have talked some about Jahmyr Gibbs, the running back committed to Georgia Tech, who's kind of lighting the world on fire at the high school level for Dalton High School. And AL.com, which is the big website in Alabama that covers Alabama and Auburn, did an interesting story on Gibbs this week in that there's a quote. Jeff, you've probably seen this, but I'll read it for the rest of our audience. Gibbs says, I'm committed to Tech, but I'm taking visits right now. I'm going to go to Alabama this week. That's for the Tennessee game. Then LSU, Ohio State, and to Florida. It's the Alabama part of this that I find to be kind of interesting. You know, I have been of the belief that Georgia's best bet for a second running back for this 2020 class involves a guy like, you know, Don Chaney Jr., who you brought up, Tank Bigsby, who I've held out some hope for in the absence of what many people now think is Zachary Evans maybe going a different direction or maybe not. Or it's difficult to know what Evans is going to do one way or another, so you're kind of forced to sometimes talk about other running backs. But on this program, and when you and I have gotten together, Gibbs is not a name that comes up all that much. Is Alabama really recruiting Jahmyr Gibbs, though?
Well, Brendan, anybody can come into Tuscaloosa and T-Town and watch them take on Rocky Top. He's a guy that's on everybody's radar, man. He is an unknown. This is what needs to happen. These schools need to come in, and they need to take a look at him. They need to eyeball him. They need to check his shoulders. They need to check his frame. They need to see whether or not he can do these things he's doing now and project them to whether or not he's doing it in the SEC. He's expected to be in Alabama, and everybody's wondering when Georgia's going to get an official. He's already been to Georgia. Folks need to remember that one as well. Does Georgia get an official? That's just going to be an interesting running back weekend recruiting-wise for the Tide in and of itself, because the mystery man, Brandon, the enigma wrapped up in a riddle that has a big question mark over his head, he is expected to be in Alabama this weekend for a visit as well. And you know who I'm talking about with that, right?
Yeah. Remind the audience, though.
Five-star running back Zachary Evans.
Okay, wow. How about that?
He is expected to be in Alabama as well. That's the recruiting story that never keeps on spinning one way or the other. And then if Zachary Evans is there at Alabama and he does show up, in my mind's eye, that makes me believe that I don't know if Jahmyr Gibbs will have as fantastic an official visit with attention from the coaches as much as Zachary Evans might be taking some of that luster and lure and spotlight away.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm sorry I wasn't when you asked about the Zachary Evans thing, I was making a comparison here on my computer. I mean, how do you think Jahmyr Gibbs compares to, like, say, Master Teague, who was another, you know, now Teague is heavier than Gibbs is, but it was another kind of running back of maybe a similar fashion. At one point in time, Teague was a name that was at least loosely connected to Georgia, ended up going to Ohio State. He's put up decent numbers as a backup running back there this season. Do you think that Jahmyr Gibbs could be as good in college as Master Teague has been for Ohio State, a name at one point in time that it had at least some connection to UGA on the recruiting trail?
Brandon, am I allowed to bring up the point where he needs a playmaker, a quarterback, to take attention away from the defense?
That's still a touchy subject off of last Saturday.
So rewind, folks. I want you to remember Master Teague. Master Teague was a guy, everybody saw that commitment video. It looked, if you want to remember back down memory lane, there were spots in that where folks were thinking, was that a Georgia G he had on? And then there was a new ending shot for some scenes in the film. Make no mistake about it, Master Teague was a Georgia or kind of Ohio State type guy back when his recruiting took place. The big difference between Master Teague and Jahmyr Gibbs, and Brandon, I think the biggest denominator that people are going to have to figure out with Mr. Gibbs is not maybe the competition he's running through and the holes that are there where he's not showing his ability when he should be contained, when he should be wrapped up. Reminder here, folks, that's what Del McGee likes to see. He likes to see those dog yards where it looks like he should go down, a lesser back should go down, but that young man fights through, pops tackles, and makes his way to daylight. That's the thing with Jahmyr Gibbs that needs to be seen. Besides the fact that, let's be clear, Brandon, Georgia's backs, they like those guys to be 205 pounds. They like them to be big because they want to run those guys between the tackles in the SEC. And those kind of specialist running backs, those guys that are around 190 to 200 pounds, you better be very lethal and very elite in those change of direction and burst and explosiveness areas if you're going to be at RBU for the Bulldogs.
Very fast before we let you go, Mekhi Sherman had a tweet this week that I thought was kind of interesting, essentially reaffirming his pledge to Georgia. Not that that needed to be done, but certainly touting Kirby Smart. Sherman tweeted out, "I just got off the phone with Kirby Smart. Never makes me regret my decision, but rather strengthens it." Jeff, I wish I wasn't cynical sometimes. Is this an organic tweet? Because if it is, obviously it sends the perfect message that recruits still love Kirby, even when some fans are disappointed about a loss to South Carolina. I think it probably does also illustrate, you know, just how well George and this coaching staff are at establishing these relationships. But admittedly, this also feels like the kind of thing that would be really great to have a recruit send out. If you can't, you know, if you can't publish a commitment the days after a game, then at least have one of your five stars reaffirm his pledge. I'm trying not to be cynical, but sometimes it's hard not to be.
Brandon, I think the one thing here is no one's ever going to question Kirby's in-cycle recruiting management or his tempo or the way he recruits these guys. I think that's a nature right there, Brandon, of Kirby Smart got on the phone with a lot of his core recruits, but he does that every week. He talks to a lot of his guys once a week, especially the steadfast members of the class like Mr. Sherman. And I think Mikhail just basically heard a lot of things in the wake of that defeat, how they handle it, how they move forward, how they galvanize the rest of the season. And that was very encouraging for him to hear. And I guess Mr. Sherman kind of felt like all of your Dog Nation daily listeners. Every time they hear from you, every time they chat with you, every time they're a part of your program, that strengthens their connection to Dog Nation and Dog Nation Daily.
Sure. Well, it's really good stuff, Jeff. I'm sorry for keeping you so long here today. I appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing you in Athens tomorrow. You'll be a part of a lot of our stuff, including our Pella Window post-game show after the game, and no doubt you'll be all over the place in Athens trying to stay dry, stay warm, stay whatever else. We appreciate being here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger today, and as I said, I look forward to seeing you between the hedges tomorrow.
Brandon, my man, can't wait to see you in camouflage or Gore-Tex on Saturday. Rain gear, Brandon Adams, guys. This is going to be a very rare sighting.
It is a sexy sight to behold, I can promise you that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, let's move on to our SEC Through here because there are a lot of games I want to talk about. A big, actually pretty deep slate in the SEC, and of course we'll do this as part of our MyBookie Best Bets. You know, when you find MyBookie online, just type it into your browser, MyBookie, and you use the promo code DOGNATION, our friends at MyBookie are going to give you a big-time first deposit bonus. You can get it doubled, you can get up to $1,000, and of course, MyBookie's already known for the best player perks in the business and the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. It's one of the reasons why folks who want to kind of get going in the gambling world, it's when they choose MyBookie. And so I'll invite you to do the same thing. Just make sure you use the promo code DOGNATION to get the big first deposit bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Simple as that with MyBookie. Let's do our MyBookie best bets here. South Carolina kind of opened this week around that 6-point number against Florida. Honestly, if you go to MyBookie right now, it may be hard to find this at 6, but if you can get it at 6, I really like the Gamecocks. And this is different than what I would have thought I'd be saying at the beginning of the week. First of all, look at the numbers here. If you care about Football Outsiders FEI, Gamecocks number 6 defense, Florida's offense just 54th. Now, it's an advantage for the Florida defense on the other side, but still, this is a pretty good South Carolina defense against a Florida offense that has not moved it that well. This is a Florida cover in this game. You kind of need this one to go a little bit like the Florida-Auburn game did a couple of weeks ago. But you know the story there. Bo Nix was intercepted 3 times there in that game. Will Muschamp said last night that Ryan Olinsky, the Gamecocks quarterback, will play on Saturday. That means he's been very accurate this year. He's only thrown 3 picks all season long. He's completing nearly 63% of his passes, 75% when healthy and playing against Georgia. I actually like South Carolina to keep this one close. If you can find it at 6, I think the Gamecocks are my bookie best bet. Auburn at Arkansas, I like the Auburn Tigers on the road. Now, history would tell you that John Chavis has done well against Gus Malzahn offenses, but this is not the same kind of talent that Chavis is used to having against Malzahn. Line kind of moving in the direction of Arkansas a little bit, probably. This has been blowouts the last 3 years, 34-3, 52-20, 56-3. Auburn not typically favored by this much on the road, only been favored by 2 touchdowns or more 3 times in the Malzahn era. All of that came in 2017, but that shouldn't scare you off of this one. I like Auburn as a MyBookie best bet for Saturday. And believe it or not, I actually like the underdog in the LSU-Mississippi State game for a couple pretty simple reasons. First of all, Mississippi State's been better than you think at home. They're actually 2-1 against the number thus far this year. LSU's been great against the spread under Ed Orgeron. Not always as good as a road favorite, though. Just 6-5 in 11 opportunities since Orgeron became coach. But here's the big thing that matters to me. LSU on the road this season, while their offense has been a sure thing given in every game, they've actually given up 38 on the road this year twice. once to a good Texas team, and once to a terrible Vanderbilt team. LSU's got a lot to play for in future games. Maybe a little easy to overlook this one. You worry about the quit factor with Mississippi State just a bit, but they're getting 19 points here. This game may stay just underneath that number. I mean, 17 is a pretty key number, and you could do that with some ease here with the Bulldogs. I actually like Bully as a plus 19-point underdog against LSU. Moving on our MyBookie Best Bets, Missouri at Vanderbilt. I know it seems like a square to take a 21.5-point favorite on the road, but this is how bad Vanderbilt is right now. Missouri is a MyBookie Best Bet for me. Vanderbilt scored 10 or fewer points three times this season. Believe it or not, the Missouri offense is actually averaging 39 points on the year. Vandy just 8-11-1 as a home dog over its last 20 games. Missouri is a road favorite over its last 20 games, 12-8 against the number. They've also covered six of their last seven when favored by 20 or more, so the big number doesn't scare them too much. Believe it or not, they've actually been a bit of a big favorite a good bit over the last couple of years, including in the Barry Odom era here. So I'm not afraid of taking Missouri here because of how bad Vanderbilt is. They were blown out last week to UNLV because of how hot the Missouri offense has been of late. Texas A&M goes to Ole Miss. This is an A&M team that might be turning the corner just a little bit. They were showing some signs of life against Alabama. Ole Miss, I believe, is just done. They have failed to cover in their last six straight. They've lost against the spread. Jimbo won his only game as a road favorite a year ago against South Carolina. The number here is 6.5. I do like the Texas A&M Aggies to maybe get a little healthy there. I'd go against Alabama, favored by nearly 35 against Tennessee. The half point may mean something here. Alabama's good as a favorite typically, but not always great as a favorite of 30 or more. Give me Tennessee there. And then to rattle through some of these national games for a second, I'm done with Jim Harbaugh. I'll take Penn State against the Wolverines in the whiteout game. I think Oregon at Washington's a pretty fun game. The momentum is all on the side of the Ducks, but I look for Jacob Eason and the Huskies to show a little signs of life here. The other game involving top 25 opponents, you got Arizona State and Utah. I think Kyle Whittingham's actually a pretty good coach. They're at Rice-Eccles Stadium as a two-touchdown favorite. I'll take the Utes in that one. Don't forget tonight, we like Friday night college football around here. You've got Ohio State and Northwestern. I guess there's a deal with the baseball going on where that one may get moved to one of the other Fox channels, so check your local listings as they say, but a little Friday night football coming up tonight as well. We'll make that your SEC through with our MyBookie Best Bets. All right, let's turn our attention back to Georgia, Kentucky here on Dog Nation, daily presented by Kroger, and let's try to deal with like three big-time key issues for Georgia on Saturday as it relates to things that Kirby Smart has said this week. You heard Jeff Sintel a moment ago talking about receivers needing to get separation. I'll invite you to listen to Terrence Edwards yesterday, who also addressed that same thing. Kirby Smart will talk about that in a moment. Before that, though, on the issue of the number of offensive linemen that Georgia's been playing, the number of wide receivers that Georgia's been playing, has it just been too much? Well, Kirby did talk about that this week. Here's what Kirby said about that.
Well, offensive line, we were forced to. I don't know if you're aware of the injuries we've been dealing with, so there's not a lot of choice. If a guy can't go, you can't play with four. So you have to put another guy in. So there's not really a rotation going on the offensive line. There's been the only rotation has been Ben and Cade for the most part. Everything else has been injury-driven for us. As far as wideouts, we don't play – nobody plays three wideouts. I mean, most people we play 6-7, and right now we're playing 6-7, and we'd like to keep those guys fresh as possible, especially in a game that you're going 2 minute three times. You want to keep guys fresh and try to do that.
So it sounds like Kirby pretty committed to that wide receiver rotation that he's been a part of. Not every Georgia fan's going to love that necessarily, the offensive line situation. I do think it'll be key on Saturday against the Wildcats to see how much Georgia can stay with just those five offensive linemen, how successful they become. I think a lot of Georgia fans would like to see a shortened bench with its wide receivers. Admittedly, I'm one of those people. But as Kirby Smart said, really it kind of comes down to the guys that are in the game. Can they kind of win those one-on-one battles, punish defense for playing Georgia the way they're choosing to play the Dogs? Here's more of Kirby.
If you're looking for man-to-mans to stay on the run, can you get off of press coverage? Can you separate? What kind of style of defense are you going against? Is it more zone or more man? And each one of those is really important. And it's important for our wideouts to be able to create separation for Jake. It's important for Jake to see separation to feel confident to be able to throw it.
And then finally, one more point I wanted to get to. We should maybe have talked about this week more than we did. Dominic Blaylock, when returning punts, you want to get playmakers involved. Blaylock seemingly one of those guys. But so far this year, we've seen him catching punts, but not necessarily returning them. What's up with that? And is there a chance we may see more of that against Kentucky? Kirby also addressed that just for a little bit this week.
Unfortunately, there's times where we play in safe, where we play in a prevent mode of fake alert based on who they send in the game or based on the down and distance in the game that he has to fair catch it. And we had several of them that we were in safe the other day where he's not protected, meaning we're not holding people up for him, and so he can't just abandon it and try to return it on his own. So we weren't able to set up a lot of returns, which goes back to our third down, defensively third down. We won third down. Statistically, looks great that we had really good success on third down. We made our goal 70%, but we didn't hold them to third and long enough to where we got to return the ball on fourth down. There's a lot of times that they were in the 50-yard line range that, you know, they're in fake mode, and we want to be as safe as we can to get possession of the ball and not be able to return it. And that had a lot to do with Dom having a fair catch. It's not a matter of him wanting to.
So I think it's an interesting answer from Smart, and something else to watch for against Kentucky. Does Blaylock get a chance to return a punt? Do Georgia receivers create more separation, more opportunities for those big explosive plays? And can the offensive line, whether it's the five guys the entire game or a little bit of rotation on the basis of injury or whatever else seems to cause that group to change up, can they be as dominant on Saturday as Dog fans hope they will be? I think those are three things to watch as Georgia gets ready to take on Kentucky on Saturday. And speaking of things to watch, you know, we like kicking off the weekend with Kroger. Many of you go there to get stocked up for your game-watching party, your tailgates, or anything else you have going on the weekend. They also help us preview the weekend around UGA. Dogs have a basketball exhibition tonight, but the attention is going to be when it happens tomorrow in and around Sanford Stadium, of course, for our Kroger kickoff. Our pregame show will get going there around 3:30 p.m. on Saturday. That includes the dog walk, which is scheduled to begin around 3:45. A lot of this is weather permitting. We're going to try our very dead level best to be on the air, but the weather is not expected to be great, so we're going to try to make this happen one way or another. But the dog walk expected to go down around 3:45. We hope to be on the air there at 3:30 p.m., and I don't foresee that being that big of a problem. It's at least worth mentioning. Georgia versus Kentucky, 6 p.m. after that, under the lights. Fun atmosphere in Sanford Stadium to be sure as the Dogs look to get back to their winning ways. And then after the game is over, it's our Pella Window post-game show. Pella Window post-game show right after the game there inside the UGA bookstore. We will look forward to seeing you for all of that. And by the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, there's a great event coming up on Wednesday, October 30th. A fun day at Kroger stores all around the Atlanta area from 4 to 7 p.m. You can enjoy trick-or-treating, cakewalk, cookie decorating, and more. This is kind of a Kroger tradition. It's always really fun, and this year it's Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 7 p.m., so make sure you go get stocked up everything you need for Halloween night and enjoy a great kind of atmosphere around your local Kroger with all of that. Let me also say this, that with Georgia playing Kentucky on Saturday, a chance to watch the Gators in the early game against South Carolina with some attention towards the cocktail party. Georgia, as we said to start the program, a little bit of a desperation mode right now. No room for error. That means that game coming up as well. And there's a lot on the line for Georgia fans who love knowing it's been a dominated rivalry by the Dogs as of late. They hope to see it continue. How about 1,084 days? That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater. And, of course, it's great to have you, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.